Your story starts to weave into all this history, but I just wanted to ask you one other thing about the Jewish community, or the Gibraltarians, Gibraltarians as well, is that, and again, you know, you were very young, so you may not know this, but do you think that in Gibraltar, people were aware of what was happening to the Jewish community in Europe before the war in the 30s?
Some people were, who received the Jewish Chronicle. I mean, in Gibraltar and in Madeira. I remember I was in Madeira. So some people heard about it. I wasn't aware of it. It was not till after the war and Nuremberg and so on that I became aware of it, which in part, accounted for my loss of faith, because the prayers that I read daily and the events that happened were contradictory.
Do you think that Jewish people may have taken refuge in Gibraltar? Some of them.
I remember one or two Germans.
German Jews.
Jews turned up.
It's interesting, isn't it? So let's just go back to your experience now. So you were. So you were 9 or 10 when you were evacuated from Gibraltar. Can you remember anything of the build-up of the garrison before you left?
No.
So what's your sort of earliest memory?
The only memory I have connected with the war... Well, first of all, I remember the visit of the commander-in-chief of the French forces in Morocco, and there was a big parade. And I thought the French officer wore a funny hat. I'd never seen anything like it before. But the other thing is, when we had the Manchester Regiment arrived in 1940, and they had the new gaiters and boots, which made them look, everybody said, rather like Berbers. That's the only thing. Otherwise, you know... I remember the Spaniards building fortifications on the other side of the frontier. On the British side of the frontier, there were a pile of sandbags with a Sten gun.
That sounds like the British. And so
A Bren gun.
So you... What was your father's profession? What did he do?
He was a merchant.
And did he stay behind?
No, he came. He stayed behind when we went to Morocco first. Then we returned to Gibraltar, and he came with us, and he was actually working in the British consulate there.
And so what happened? That first of all, you were sent to Morocco to Casablanca.
We were in Casablanca. Other people were put elsewhere, but we went privately, so we went to Casablanca. But then France fell, and amongst the many troops that were rescued at Dunkirk were a lot of French. So the British government prepared a convoy of 12 tramp steamers and to repatriate these French soldiers to French territory, so they sent them to Casablanca. And when the ships arrived in Casablanca, they were stopped from leaving by the Moroccan authorities and said, you can't leave without taking the Gibraltarian evacuees with you. We don't want them here. So we were sent back. The British government didn't want the evacuees to return to Gibraltar because they thought they would never then leave. The reason why they left was that Gibraltar was not defensible if you had a big civilian population. But city councillors approached the governor and promised that the Gibraltarians would leave if they were asked to, what they were landed. So we were landed because these tramp steamers were in terrible condition, But it was one thing to bring in women and children over overnight from Casablanca. A 3-week voyage to England in those days would have been impossible. But they were not subsequently used, but they were fitted up in the dockyard to take people.
So the same old steamers were sort of refitted to go to England?
Yes. Other ships were used. We went to Madeira in an old cross-channel or Irish Sea ferry. It was called the Royal Ulsterman.
Can you remember the journey?
Oh, yes.
Can you talk a little about that?
Well, it wasn't very eventful. It was an overnight. It would have been about 36 hours on the boat, and I remember sort of when we steamed into Funchal Bay.
Did you have to leave? You obviously left your home in Gibraltar.
Yes.
Was anybody staying there?
Well, my uncles stayed. My father dismantled his rented flat. My grandfather's house, where all this stuff was put in a basement where all this was put in. You know, of all the various members of the family, the possessions of various members of the family. But my grandfather's house was a requisition and became the headquarters of the
Army HQ or the
HQ. It was a mess.
Oh,
Of the Polish officers in Gibraltar.
Oh, right. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. And do you remember what, I mean, for a small boy or a 10-year-old boy, all this must have been rather an adventure, was it?
It was, yes. Well, I mean, I didn't suffer at all. the grown-ups must have been very worried. I mean, I would have been if I'd realised, but, you know, it was all very interesting. I mean, I remember being shown round the ship by the first mate of the ship that I went back to Gibraltar in, and steaming into the bay, and saw a Sunderland flying boat landing. It was all great fun.
So when you went to Madeira, how long were you there for?
5 years.
And where did you stay and what happened?
Well, we were privately, so we rented houses. We moved several times.
And did you go to school?
Oh, yes, they started a special school for the Gibraltar. It was known as the British School for Gibraltar Children. It had 150 pupils. The headmaster was an Englishman from Madeira who had served as a fighter pilot in the First World War. He was, by then was a Seventh-day Adventist preacher. Nice man. So we had no school on Saturdays, because being a Seventh-day Adventist...
So it fitted in quite well with you. So it was a real mixed bunch then, this...
Oh, very much so, yes.
And
You see, there was about half the people went under their own steam, or were well off, but the whole of the population of Catalan Bay were evacuated to Madeira. And they were really working class, because Catalan Bay in those days was a very poor village.
And were they mainly Jewish?
No.
No. So it wasn't it particularly... I mean, because what I haven't quite grasped is, was it... an awful lot of people went to England,
yes.
Went to central London.
Yes.
So how was it worked out who went where?
By chance.
Totally by chance.
You see, what happened, so Kenelm Digby, who was in charge of the convoy I referred to, said he wouldn't take women and children. They were supposed to go to the West Indies. We were all supposed to go to the West Indies. In the middle of this, Madeira, of course, which was a tourist place and was completely devastated by the lack of tourism, there was an offer from the Portuguese government to take 2,000 Gibraltarians. So the Gibraltar government accepted that. So a number went under our own steam. Others, like the population of Catalan Bay, was sent by the government and maintained by the government right through the war. Others were sent to England. But there was one liner which was fitted out as a troop ship, and that went to Jamaica, because it was felt that it was in condition to take people there across the Atlantic. So that's how it happened. It was by chance.
It really is quite random, isn't it? Because obviously some people had a terrible experience in Kensington High Street, you know, during the Blitz, and then others were in Jamaica. I don't know any Jamaica stories yet. I don't know anybody who went there.
Relatively few. I don't know whether Morris Shiberas is in England these days, but I know he went to Jamaica.
And do you think, I mean, obviously, that people were, I mean, you were quite unusual in that you had your father with you.
Yeah.
An awful lot of people, certainly a lot of people have told me about Gibraltarian women who went, say, to London, who really hadn't been out of Gibraltar before. They'd led pretty sheltered lives.
So.
And suddenly there they were in the middle of London. I mean, do you think that there were sort of lots of sort of social problems as a result of this? Because, you know, men left alone in Gibraltar, women in London, etc.
I don't know. I wasn't in England. There were some problems, but not greatly. I mean, there wasn't that kind of problem. Some Gibraltarian women did marry Portuguese when I was in Madeira, but very few, relatively.
And was the sort of sense of Gibraltar kept alive in your family?
Oh, very much.
And can you tell me how that was? How?
Well, we were just waiting to come back. I mean, it was a temporary displacement. We used to dream about Gibraltar. And I'm sure that the others all over must have felt the same. You know, we weren't moved out permanently. We were only moved out for a short while until things were like that.
Well, that's true, but 4 years in the life of a 10 till 14 is quite a, you know, you change quite a lot in that period.
Yeah, but I still dreamt of coming back to Gibraltar when one never settled there. You know, you knew it wasn't your permanent home.
So what was it like when you came back?
It was rather grimy and overbuilt. There were Nissen huts everywhere because Gibraltar had 35,000 troops around, and so every place where you could see there was a Nissen hut. There wasn't enough evacuation because obviously people couldn't go back. A lot of people had lived in Spain before the war and they couldn't go back. So the return was spaced out over a long period. Some people didn't return to Gibraltar till about 1950, because there just was no room for them to live, which is where Hayek was sent to report on the living conditions and accommodation in Gibraltar.
And there were obviously quite a few people who were, you know, after they left London, were sent to Northern Ireland as sort of holding camp.
Well, that was during the V2. Because the rockers were raining onto London, it was decided to evacuate the Gibraltarians from London to Northern Ireland. But that was 1944, before the return.
I didn't realise it was because of the V2s. I thought it was because of sort of, yeah, well, that's interesting, because I have a few people who can remember the V2s and then, yeah, moved out swiftly afterwards. Victor Riso,
yes,
who I interviewed a few weeks ago, and he talks very graphically about London.
Yeah, well, but he was there and I wasn't.
Yes. And what about, I just going back to this Northern Ireland thing, when you say some people didn't come back till the 50s, I think that was also people in Ireland. Quite a lot of people in Ireland didn't come back for some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a book about that, which is by Tommy Finneson, who gives you the list of people when they came back, what ships they came in and all that sort of thing.
There's a thing here, I'm just going to show you. Gerry Robinson, who's my boss, gave me. And that's a Saint Field. They're doing a project as well, but there are a couple of Benedies in that picture, and I wondered if they were any relation.
This is a cousin. I can't place the sort of Benedy. I know that's David Cohen. That's the Reverend Benzimra. The others I can't place. Presumably that was Raquel Naon.
Naon, yes.
I remember her, she was at school with me.
Mm.
It's a hairstyle more than that, but you know, it's very difficult to make a face out.
Yes, not very good picture. But that suggests, I think, when I had a look, that there were a lot of Jewish evacuees were put together in this instance.
Yes, there was a place called North End House, where the Jews in London were centred, and they were all put in one place.
And whereabouts was that? Can you remember where it was?
It's North End Road. It's near Olympia.
Oh, Fulham.
Fulham, yes.
Which is why there are quite a lot of Olympians, why there are quite a lot of Gibraltarians in Fulham still.
Well, yes, a number of them went to further out, and a number of them stayed in hotels around Tottenham Court Road. But it's a question of where you could accommodate this number of people.